Welcome to the Lockdown Minnesota Twins podcast. Today is Wednesday, April 1st, and I'm your gracious host, Nash Walker. I'm here today with Twins Daily writer Ted Schwerzer. This is our second take. First one was great. I expect the second one to be just as good. Ted, how are you doing today, and how have these last couple weeks been for you amid the COVID-19 crisis?
Good. Good afternoon. And yeah, it's been quite a whirlwind. Earlier this month, I was down in Fort Myers, so going from covering the Twins and watching spring training games and kind of seeing things ramp up with minor leaguers showing up and camp days kind of kicking off, and then all of a sudden, you know, the NBA shuts down on a Wednesday night, and then Thursday the dam breaks and baseball is done, March Madness is done, and I am on a flight home to I guess this new reality.
Yeah, since then, right? At least you got to see one game. Did you see a couple games down there?
I believe three, actually. I was there Monday, and it went to Clearwater on Tuesday, and then they played the Braves on Wednesday.
Okay, so since then, Major League Baseball shut down. They did come to that new agreement, Major League Baseball and the Major League Players Association. Ted, today we kind of got a little bit of news. I forgot the guy's name. I can't remember. But maybe Major League Baseball is talking about a 100-game season, trying to start on July 1st, going into mid-October, and then having the World Series at Dodger Stadium instead of having the All-Star game. They'd play games that week to make it up. I think we expected that to happen if the season were to resume. Do you think that this is a viable plan? Do you think that this is July 1st is too early? Do you think that's too optimistic? How do you feel about that plan?
Yeah, I think it looks like Matt Spiegel is this guy's name from a radio station in Chicago. I think obviously baseball is under the right mindset of it's a business, so they want to try and get as many games in as possible. July 1st seems... I guess I don't know what it seems, because everything seems to be changing on a weekly basis here. But, I mean, that's, what, 2-3 months out from right now. So that gives them, you know, ample time to allow some adjustment and developments to take place. Obviously, you're going to have probably a 2-3 week ramp up time there for, you know, a new spring training or something like that. It's interesting, obviously, with some information like that coming out, how fluid it is. I mean, he goes on to say, you know, if the Dodgers make the World Series, then the away games or the home games or something like that would be at either San Diego or Anaheim. There's no plans to move teams from their home stadiums in earlier series, so you could have a team like the Twins playing home games in November, which could be problematic. And then they also mentioned something along the lines of the schedule being picked up after the All-Star break, which is interesting as well, because obviously, a schedule isn't necessarily balanced from any one specific point in the season. So having, you know, another random amount of games against your division or whatever, I mean, it's just all so up in the air. And it looks like, logistically, a minor league season is probably not going to be feasible either.
That's difficult. And we're going to talk about the minor leaguers as well, Ted. But for the Twins' sake, and maybe just for a favorite's sake, the Yankees and the Twins and the Astros and the Dodgers and, you know, the NL Central and NL East, they're both up in the air. But, a shortened season, we know, doesn't bode well for the favorites. Would you like to see the schedule, if they were to start July 1st, would you like to see the schedule tailored more towards keeping that same ratio of division games to American League matchups for the Twins, and then how about interleague? How do you feel about that ratio? Do you think it should stay the same? And I assume we'd want it to stay the same for the Twins so they can play the Central as much as possible. What do you think about that, Ted?
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at a couple of weeks ago on Twitter, I did some of the math as to what amount of divisional games were played last year and the percentage of the 162 game schedule they represented. I want to say it was something like 18 or 19 games. I mean, I think Interleague should just go away this year. Those are non-essential games, given, you know, it's more for a business sake than it is finding out how you stack up against your direct competition. But I would imagine a lot of their thought process in keeping similar dates just strictly is a logistical question. I mean, you start shuffling one team's schedule, you obviously have to shuffle all 30, and then you already have travel booked or, you know, your away dates figured out and that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, if we're in a condensed season, it obviously hurts the Twins because they go from, you know, being able to lengthen their lead potentially at the end of the season or throughout the course of a full 162 games to a less nuanced situation where a team like the White Sox or the Indians may not fall off as quickly. But yeah, I mean, if the number of games goes down, I would really like to almost see it just be a divisional season and you play your division or a very heavy portion of the schedule is just your division with, you know, then a couple games against the rest of the American League sprinkled in.
Do you hate stepping on the scale? Maybe it's because you haven't met the right one. A company called Withings produced the first body smart scale, and they're still the best. In fact, Tom's Guide rated Withings Body Plus is the best overall smart scale in 2020. If you're looking to lose weight, willpower is key. But so is having the right tools. Withings smart scales are known for durability and an exceptional user-friendly design. Step on and get data from every weigh-in, syncing automatically to the free app for iOS and Android via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. Lots of smart scales don't have the Wi-Fi option, and it means you need to have your phone on you, but Withings Body Plus gives weight, full body composition, weight trend, even a local weather report. The scale can support up to 8 users and even knows who is who. So here's the deal. You can get 25% off a Withings Body Plus scale right now at withings.com for a very limited time. Go to withings.com, that's withings.com/MLB to get 25% off a body plus body composition scale. That's withings.com/MLB to get 25% off a body plus body composition scale.
Yeah, I think when you look at it, so it's 47% against your own division, I think is right around that number. So maybe you can play every team in the division 10 to 12 times and kind of fill out the rest, and you get that 50%. But that certainly is interesting too, Ted, to just have a divisional a divisional-based playoff format of if you win your division, you're in. I know John and Aaron talked about this on Cleveland the Geek as well. Of maybe they just do full division the whole year. You don't play anyone else. If you win your division, you get in, then they do a round-robin format in the playoffs. How open are you to creative things happening, Ted? How far do you think Major League Baseball should go in this to make sure a season gets in? Do you draw a line anywhere in the sand and say, okay, this would cause us to look back on 2020 and say that was a little bit of a joke?
Yeah, I think there's going to be two definites or absolutes this year with no matter how it transpires. One is that nothing is going to stack up evenly to any other year. I mean, simply it's not going to happen because the configuration and results of the year are just not going to be in the same vein of a traditional 162. And even if, you know, it's a shortened season, we've had other shortened seasons before with a strike or whatever. But in those scenarios too, you don't have, you know, the uncertainty of what happens if it gets shut down again, because there's an outbreak among players, or the uncertainty of, you know, no fans in the stadium or whatever. So I think the one for sure certain is that no matter what, it's going to be an outlier year. And the second thing is, no matter how they play the game, Mike Trout's still going to be the best player in the game.
I agree. And I remember Matt Trueblood sent out a tweet a few weeks ago that said, you know, when we were first finding out about this, that said, Trout hasn't played over 140 games and, you know, still is the best And he won't this year either. And that's a big thing, Ted. I think when you look at these guys that are in the midst of their prime, I mean, we're going to see things from Mike Trout. We have seen things from Mike Trout that we've never seen before. I think this is his age 28 season or age 29. So not having a year at all is just so depleting to lose those prime years from guys like Mike Trout and your guy in Showtime and even from the Twins and Kepler and Polanco and Sano. I mean, the Twins are really getting into their stride right now, and to not have a season or to even have a season that's 40, 50 games would be really disappointing. I know at this point we take 40 or 50 games, but if you told us that a month ago, I think we'd be really just shocked and also disappointed that this Twins team won't have a chance to play a full season and really show us what they can do.
Yeah, I mean, you're dealing with so much volatility here, and it just it's disappointing from that huge picture of not, there's always going to be a what if tied to it. Mm-hmm. What if it would have worked out correctly? Because yeah, I mean, you lose guys prime like Mike Trout or Kepler or somebody coming into their prime, but then also like the Twins are up against the final year of Nelson Cruz's contract. They signed Josh Donaldson to a 5-year deal because they wanted the first 2 or 3 years, yep. You know? So you run into that now, and Major League Baseball has already announced that the service time is going to be counted regardless. So at the end of this year, whatever happens to it, Nelson Cruz is a free agent. Josh Donaldson has 4 years left. So, I mean, time goes on, but the games don't get played. And yeah, that's a Twins fans have been waiting for a long time for a team to, you know, make a deep run or be that good. And they're there right now. This team is that good and they can make a deep run. And now they're going to have to do it in what's going to end up being somewhat of a circus type year. It's just, yeah, as a fan, whenever baseball comes back, we're going to be there and excited and ready to go. But it's going to be hard to, you know, consume it in the same vein and be like, okay, this is how it would have gone.
Right. And it's going to be interesting in that sense too, because I remember at the very beginning when it got delayed even 2 weeks, we're like, oh my goodness, April 9th. And then, you know, they kept getting pushed back. And now it's a good way to say it is the worst case scenario continues to become the best case scenario with this. So we're just hoping for the best. You mentioned, Ted, minor league baseball may not get a season. Major League Baseball announced yesterday that they'll be paying a $400 basically per diem per month until May 31st to the minor leaguers. And then we see Shin-Soo Choo come forward today. And what did you say? He's giving $1,000 to every single player in the organization?
Yeah, so it ends up being something like $190,000, which, I mean, yeah, it's an awesome gesture. And so is the $400 for Major League Baseball. But it's that $400 is an inconsequential amount in the grand scheme of things. And the fact that a millionaire player is stepping up before billionaire owners do just doesn't sit right with me. But, not, I mean, the compensation and treatment of minor leaguers hasn't been right for a long time. And obviously, this isn't shifting any of that. If nothing else, this is pushing Rob Manfred's desire to get some of those teams contracted sooner, and that's likely going to happen. But, you know, I hope what remains or what comes of the minor leagues as we see it from, you know, next year on is a much more supported and much more vital part of the organization. You know, we talk about losing some of the prime of, you know, Mike Trout or somebody like that. Well, we're going to be in a situation very likely where there's no minor league season just from a logistics standpoint. And how bad or detrimental is that to the long-term health of a major league team not having that development for their prospects? I mean, how far off does Royce Lewis then get because he didn't have a year of development, or Alex Kirilloff or whatever?
That's a really good point. Do you think, Ted, it makes me think, do you think a team like Chicago, like the White Sox, are more, I've been trying to think of it as a, how are the Twins affected by this compared to other teams? They're in no better position, I don't believe, because of, you know, the Nelson Cruz and Josh Donaldson contracts. But does a team that's waiting to kind of enter that window of contention, do you think that team would hurt more than a Twins team that's already in it? Or how do you view that as a scope of the league if you've thought about that? Ted? Hello?
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right.
I muted myself.
No worries. No worries.
So, I mean, we've kind of experienced this in the 2017, I believe. Yes, 2017 Twins, and how there is volatility in that, development for a minor leaguer. And that's kind of been my point of contention with how the White Sox are receiving so much steam, is that they're really raw still, and they have things to prove. So, yeah, guys like Nick Madrigal and some of those top prospects that are going to come up and be expected to produce, what if they weren't going to come up, or what if they're not ready to come up on opening day? Now they have to come up cold, or they have to come out without, the benefit of some minor league seasoning. And a guy like Luis Robert, who is expected to be their starting center fielder, now his impact is felt significantly less, or it's much more imperative that he just hits the ground running. Because if it's a 100-game season and he slumps for his first 50 games, well, they're done. That's half the year. So, yeah, I think some of these teams that are either waiting on prospects or less established big leaguers are going to have some tough learning curves in a situation like this. Miguel Sano, Max Kepler, Jorge Polanco, they know how to be big leaguers.
Mm-hmm.
A minor leaguer hasn't yet experienced that.
Yeah, I think it comes down to proven versus unproven. And a proven superstar, proven twin superstar, was Joe Mauer, Ted. And recently, we've talked about his Hall of Fame case a decent amount as he kind of nears that. I think he's 3 years away from entering the ballot, from being on the ballot. How do you feel about Joe's Hall of Fame case, Ted? How do you think he compares to someone like Yadier Molina in St. Louis? And what do you think has been the main knock on Joe from Minnesota fans in particular?
Yeah, so I would say, I think, had he ended maybe right after his catching exploits, he's a first ballot walk-in backwards kind of guy. Now, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. I think it takes a couple ballots, but I think he's viewed a bit more favorably on the national scene than he maybe is in Minnesota, just because there's a less emotion tied to the feelings around him. You mentioned Yadi Molina. I mean, it's weird or funny how polarizing two different fan bases can be about their superstar. Yadi is seen as kind of a deity, even though he's average at best as an offensive producer.
Ted, I don't mean to cut you off, but do you think that Yadi's view also has a lot to do with his postseason pedigree as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. And he's been on teams that have had postseason success. I mean, Joe Mauer has played, I think, 5 or 6 postseason games. I mean, 1 year he had a great series, the other two he was non-existent. I don't know that you can draw too many conclusions from that, just because it's no different than, you look at a 3-game series and say, this guy didn't show up, he's not any good. It's a hard argument to make that way. But Twins fans too, I mean, he signed a big contract and then he got hurt, and I think that sits wrong with a lot of people. And he signed a big contract as an elite catcher and then got hurt and moved to being a very, very good defensive first baseman and an average hitter. That has a ton of value in baseball, but it doesn't have the multi-million dollar value that he signed for.
Do you think if you compare him, I'll let you go after this, do you think if you compared him to someone like Miguel Cabrera in Detroit, who similarly, I mean, not similarly in that Miguel is a below average hitter now, but similarly in signing a huge deal after, being a superstar, there are differences, of course. I mean, Miguel won the Triple Crown, but Mauer won an MVP in 2009. Do you think we look at Mauer's legacy, do you think his legacy will be thought about differently than someone like Miguel Cabrera? Is Mauer just unique in this way, Ted, with Twins fans? And what do you think that is?
Yeah, so I think a lot of what drives negativity with Joe, you look back at those 2009 numbers and how crazy they were, right? And the home runs, the 28 home runs, and I always go back to this. Like, mm-hmm. He hit a ridiculous amount of home runs that year in relation to what he'd done in his career before.
Yep.
And so extrapolating that forward, it just never made sense. Whereas Miguel Cabrera, I mean, the guy is going to, even in a shortened season, potentially reach 500 home runs this year. Like, he has the gaudy power, sexy numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And so while Joe won Gold Gloves and he won an MVP and he won batting titles, he won a lot of things while being that under-the-radar personality, and he didn't do it with that huge, gaudy power production, and that's fine as a catcher, and that's why he was worth it as a catcher, but his legacy is thought of as such a long time at first base, and all the injuries he suffered, I think often he gets tied to expectations that were never realistic for an injured first baseman.
Yeah, 28 homers in 2009, that was 20% of his entire career. Four home runs, 143 in his career. Ted, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate your flexibility. I'm looking forward to having you on again soon, and have a good night. And if you ever need a babysitter, Ted, when this dies down, I'm your guy. I'm a nanny, so just let me know.
Absolutely.
See you, Ted. Thank you.
Yep.